Hello everyone, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today is always your host, Evan Sattery, joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSattery. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at LockedOnPHXSuns. I notice our page is getting more and more support each day, so we greatly appreciate that. But today on the show, we're going to be discussing a little bit more about the trade rumors that we saw yesterday with ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. It broke when I was up in Flagstaff, which I found pretty interesting. So instant reaction before we even dive in, Brendan. It was kind of weird. I texted you about this yesterday, but since we're on the airwaves now, I might as well tell you. I know the listeners probably know this about this yesterday, but it was just a weird vibe at practice. There was no Ryan Madonna. James Jones was there, but he was tuckered away in a corner trying to like not be in sight. So it seemed like, obviously, with the Woj reports that they were negotiations. Some reports out there, I don't know if they're true or not, are saying they're kind of out of it. It's more of the Sacramento Kings now. So just what's your whole take on this situation? Because now it seems like also, I guess we can do this before we go to you, Brett, and just John Gamadoro tweeted yesterday the Suns are not interested in Jeff Teague, and they've had no discussion about him. So just what's all your takeaway from that?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot going on. I mean, I think one thing to consider, it's tough to know exactly what the priorities of each team involved is, and that's why it's tough to gauge exactly the extent to which the Suns are involved. So the reason the Kings are being brought up, there hasn't been any like incredibly credible reporting about that, but it just makes sense at surface value because they're the only team basically in the entire league with any cap space of note left. So they have about $11 million, I think, off the top of my head. And if there was any situation where one team in this kind of complex triangle or square, I guess you could say, of trade negotiations between Miami, Minnesota, potentially the Suns, whoever becomes involved, is if one of those teams were to take in or try to take in more money than they actually could, because especially Miami and Minnesota, neither one of them really has any cap space. That would mean that the Kings need to become involved because they could take some of that extra money, get a pick or something, an asset of some sort in return for their involvement, and then kind of make things work easily. The Suns really don't have that flexibility anymore because of some of the moves that they've made in the past couple months. So I guess it makes sense from that perspective. I still wouldn't buy that the Suns aren't involved, because any transaction that's going on right now, I think the Suns are going to at least be on the phone talking about, because if any players are moving, that's better than what normally happens on September 27th. Which is nothing, and training camp and, you know, positivity around the league. So if there's some sort of need for a player to move, it makes sense the Suns would be on it, especially with so many point guards involved. So that was mostly my reaction, is kind of trying to sort through what's going on. And when I first saw Teague, I mean, it makes sense now that whoever was talking to Gambo is squashing the rumor that the Suns would end up with Teague. That's never been on our radar from anybody reporting, until suddenly Woj kind of mentioned that might be the fallout from a potential deal. I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit, but what was your kind of, now that we know a little bit of what Kokoschkov wants to do, kind of what he values in a point guard next to Devin Booker, does Teague make any sense to you?
I think a little bit. Kellen and I touched on just a little bit on the pod about Jeff Teague. I know Kellen is not a big fan of Jeff Teague, but he's probably like me. I think he kind of convinced me a little bit. He's a really good distributor for this team, and he won't take many shots away from a guy like Booker or Aiden, because last year he did work with Wiggins, Butler, and Towns, and he still did all right. Obviously, a defense is a big problem with Teague. He really struggled when I watched him in Indiana. Also struggled last year with Minnesota. That's one of the reasons why they struggled defensively.
Yeah, he's so undersized.
Undersized as well, and also $19 million player option for next year. Yeah. Kind of like the Goran Dragic deal, so be a two-year thing. One of a Kobo or Melton will have to stand over that 2-year time frame. But I honestly continue to think, unless something drastic happens that they trip someone at the trade deadline or something like that, I do believe the Suns are holding out hope for keeping that max slot open, because I think that's their way to stay the most flexible.
Yeah, I think that ties into to Dragic too. But before we go there, I mean, I just think Teague, to me, the sort of the problem with him is he's the most expensive and probably the worst fit of the guys we're kind of centering on, at least with the rumors now, which would be Dragic, Jeff Teague, and Tyus Jones from Minnesota as well. Those are kind of the three guys that would be loosely connected to this Miami-Minnesota deal if it ends up happening, which kind of seems like it's inevitable at this point. I just think Teague makes the most money of all those guys, obviously way more than Tyus Jones, but also more than Goran Dragic even. Both have a player option that they're pretty likely, I think, to not use and stay around on that existing deal. They're both kind of overpaid. So I think Teague kind of makes sense in some ways in a Kokoschkov offense next to Booker on offense specifically. I don't know about defense. I just think, you know, he like you said, he's not a guy who's going to dominate the ball and take a bunch of pull-up threes and just become the core part of an offense. So that is nice next to Booker. But I think that exactly why he maybe makes sense as a fit in some ways is why he's just completely not worth the investment. I think he makes sense to be the maybe fourth or fifth starter on a good team or a really good team like the Wolves are trying to be. I don't think he makes sense to do what's necessary in Phoenix, which is just kind of be a floor general. He's like a little bit too good for that, but a little bit too bad to really be a $19 million all-star type player, I guess is how I see it.
I guess I want to get your read on this as well, but I think out of all the three options we're going to mention, Goran Dragic, Tyus Jones, Jeff Teague, I really think strongly, to be honest, that it would be Tyus Jones they're targeting in this, because the other two, honestly, with the money situation also, obviously they need a mentor there. I think that's why they want Pat Beverly so bad, because he's on a one-year deal, but they want that flexibility. And also Tyus Jones is only, I believe, 23 or something like that. So there's obviously some upside there, and he fits actually really well next to Booker. And I think that's the guy they're hoping for, that if they get such a sweet deal somewhere else, they can get maybe a point guard back, Minnesota does, maybe Tyler Johnson, Goran Dragic, however that works out, and they can just scoop out Tyus Jones.
Yeah, we might as well move on to him. I think the main reason, well, there's a lot of reasons. I agree with you. Like, I think Jones is clearly the best candidate, at least from who the Suns should be targeting now. I don't know how available he is. There's kind of just a loose imagination that he would be available kind of for the same reason Teague is being rumored as somebody who could move. Like, there's just Butler makes a lot of money. There's only so many ways aside from Hassan Whiteside going out, which I don't think any team in the league wants that guy, that contract right now, to make the contracts work for Miami's side. And so the reason we're down to Dragic, just for listeners who might not necessarily have been keeping up with the intricacies, I think Josh Richardson was initially expected to be the core part of a deal because he just signed a new extension, makes $12 million, and that's not enough on its own. But if you add a couple young guys, you get pretty close to making something work with Butler. So I think, and Kelly Olynyk was somebody you brought up when we were talking before, to kind of make things work. I don't know if he really fits next to Towns, but they have some contracts that they could add up with Richardson. If Richardson's off the table, which his name's not really coming up anymore, you quickly move on to Dragic, and that's kind of how we got where we are. If Dragic were to go back in a deal to Minnesota, there's a little bit of a point guard logjam. Tyus Jones might be available. Super cheap, and he fits amazingly next to Devin Booker. So he doesn't cause any cap problems next year like the other two guys, because he would be a restricted free agent, and the Suns would have kind of control of their own destiny in that regard. And I don't think you can find a better fit next to Devin Booker. I mean, we've talked about Jones as like imaginary. Like, if we could get that guy, it would be perfect, right?
At least for a one-year tryout, too. If he balls out on this one-year deal as a starter in a starter role, the Suns can easily bring him back because, like I said earlier, he does fit stylistically well next to Booker, especially if he improves his jumper.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's the kind of guy, like, if you acquired Terry Rozier, to have kind of another example of a guy approaching free agency who could have a big year and earn a payday, I think that type of player is on a whole different level. I think Jones, if you get him, even if he performs well, I think he's pretty clearly a step below the elite guys, and he doesn't have the spotlight of somebody like Rozier and hasn't even had the track record where even a solid season in Phoenix probably doesn't lift him above even like a Ricky Rubio, Terry Rozier level guy that is going to be available next summer. So I think he'd be pretty affordable, even knowing that restricted free agency, sometimes you get hit with a balloon offer and you can't necessarily predict that. I don't think he's a guy that some team would come try to overpay with the amount of options on the table next year. But as far as fit, I mean, I guess my one question, just to kind of judge how much you like Jones, would, do you like him or Dinwiddie better? Not that Dinwiddie's necessarily available anymore, but just as a conceptual thing next to Booker.
Ooh, it's hard because I'll toss it back to you really quickly and you toss it back to me. Do you think the Suns front office values defense more or shooting next to Booker?
I mean, I think it has to be defense. They have added a lot of defenders elsewhere, so maybe they kind of feel like if they hit on Melton, if they hit on Bridges, if they hit on Jackson and those guys stay on the team long term, there's less of a need for that. But I think you can't have another negative defender next to Booker. That's just me, though. I mean, it's tough to tell because they haven't gotten really that close on a guy yet.
I feel like Dinwiddie's more attainable, but I feel like stylistically Jones fits better because he can not only play make in a really low usage. I think it was like near 12% last year with a really good assist percentage, which is really, really good for someone like him. He's very undervalued around the league, I believe. And his steal percentage was near Shaquille Harrison last year, I believe, almost close to 3%. So if you can get a guy like Shaq Harrison, even though he's a little bit smaller, he does have a better jumper, a better efficient game. He's very efficient. People don't know that. So I do believe Tyus, I would go over Dinwiddie.
Yeah, I think so too. I also, Tyus Jones is only 22 years old and he just turned 22. He won't turn 23 till after this season. So he's super young still. What'd you say?
He's right in that age timeline of all the core.
Exactly,
too.
Yeah. And Dinwiddie's 25. So it's not a huge difference. You're still, hopefully, if you're getting those guys with the intention of re-signing them next summer in restricted free agency, both of those guys, a four-year deal for them would be the entirety of their prime for the most part. Maybe if not even for Jones, maybe you have a little bit more upside there. But at the same time, just looking at the rest of the Suns roster, it maybe makes sense. Dinwiddie almost become one of the older guys, of almost the veteran on this team, considering the young age of everyone else. So yeah, I think all things kind of point to Jones, but I've been saying all along, I just wonder whether, again, we don't really know the priorities of the Wolves, because it seems like they have six different things going on within their own front office. But one thing I would worry about is just if the Wolves are kind of resetting themselves, they want to get competitive talent back in this trade, but for all intents and purposes, it's setting them back a little bit. Do they really want to give up Tyus Jones, who was a first round pick of theirs and fits along their timeline pretty well too? That's what's been kind of hard for me to piece together. What reason they would really have to do that, especially because he is so cheap. He's not somebody that they would need to get off of in some sort of deal. He's pretty much the cheapest player on their roster. So I don't know how available he is in all this.
Did you see the tweets from, I think, sorry if I pronounced the name wrong, John Krasinski from The Athletic in Minnesota?
Which ones?
About just in practice, they were running Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose as a starting backcourt.
Yeah, I did. I think, and he was saying too, he was like, just wait, because ideally the Wolves are getting back a wing in a Butler trade, and that guy would probably become the starter, whether that's like Justice Winslow or, I don't know, Caris LeVert, somebody like that. So it is funny though. But I mean, that's what Tim told us too, right? He said, think of Derrick Rose as the backup two guard. So, I mean, it kind of fits with that. It's a little bit crazy to think of Derrick Rose as a starter, but I don't know. I mean, they don't have a lot of depth.
That's true. And I was playing around the trade machine while we were talking here, and I came up with a kind of a realistic Tyus Jones trade if you wanted to scour it over. And it's a four-team trade, actually, and it involves three Western Conference teams, two in the same division. And it's the Timberwolves would get back Goran Dragic, Kosta Kupis from Sacramento, his expiring contract, Dragan Bender, Justice Winslow, Miami Heat get back Jimmy Butler, Phoenix Suns get back Tyus Jones, and the Sacramento Kings get back Gorgui Dieng and the Bucks pick.
I don't hate that. It's funny to think of the pick going to Sacramento, but I guess all things considered. So wait, the Wolves are getting what again? Just go through that part again.
They get Dragic as a starting guard next to either Teague or whoever. Kosta Kupis takes Jang's spot, and they get two young guys back in with Bender and Winslow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's far off from what they seem to be asking. they're asking. I don't know if you saw that story from Zach Lowe and Woj this morning of like they want.
Oh, it's everything. Yeah,
it's like a starter, a young asset, and draft picks and cap flexibility. It's like, okay, so you want a team to just rehaul your entire situation as a favor for giving them Jimmy Butler. That's not going to happen. So it's far away from that asking price, but I think it's a little bit realistic, especially if maybe it's tough. The Heat don't have a lot of picks, but if they were to trade another future first in there or something, maybe that could work too. Yeah, I don't hate that. Again, I mean, Teague and Dragic both starting would be kind of odd, but I think it helps them getting. I like Justice Winslow a lot, but do you want to move on to Dragic as a Suns fit too?
Yeah, sure. And I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I believe honestly, really with Teague, Jones, and Dragic, I think Dragic is the least realistic one out of all three of those guys. Because
really,
Yeah, I just feel like maybe it's just my gut feeling, but I just feel like trading for Dragic using an asset back just seems like bad asset management. They just don't want to take that risk, I believe. But maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's if you think that about Teague, which I kind of agree with, I think you probably feel the same way about Teague. I mean, to me, they're pretty similar. Like they're making a lot of, they're both overpaid. They're both going to take, you know, they have enough of a history playing well that they're going to, you know, you're not going to just get them for nothing. Like you said, you're going to have to give something up to get both of those guys. So I don't really love either one, but I think maybe one repercussion of being involved in something like this is those trades tend to get complicated when you're involving, like if the Kings were to also be involved in, and the Suns being involved, like you can kind of maybe leverage that situation a little bit more easily rather than just like for like with one team. So I didn't really like it when the Suns were just negotiating with the Heat, but to me, maybe I think you don't have to give up quite as much if you're kind of helping another team out in a way by including yourself. I don't know. I mean, it's super complicated once you get into that realm. Did that trade work on the trade machine that you said to me?
Yeah, it actually did. It was pretty even as far as money goes all four
just
ways.
Because the Suns are just sending out Bender, so it evens out with Jones.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Just to get it on here as well, all the moving pieces, like they have to include Chandler if they get Dragic or Teague in Phoenix. And that is complicated too, because if Jang is a guy that ends up moving, if Olynyk is a guy that ends up moving, or if God forbid Hassan Whiteside becomes a part of these negotiations, now these and Kufis, who you mentioned too, is a pretty easy piece for Sacramento to include. These are all big guys. Now you're just kind of shuffling the deck with bigs, and that makes it a little bit tough too.
I really feel like on the subject really quickly, TJ Warren, I feel like you're right on the money there as far as Tyson Chandler being the contract, because I can't see if the Suns are going to help facilitate and get a point guard return, then the other teams are going to want back an expiring or a young asset to get them off the books earlier.
I agree. And I think one thing that's tough too is you could get to Jeff Teague pretty close with like TJ and Troy Daniels, or TJ, Troy Daniels, and Darrell Arthur kind of gets you around the realm where you need to be. And that makes sense from the Suns perspective, because they don't, you know, TJ would be the main value piece going back. The other guys are kind of just salary filler. I think Tim seemed interested in our last week episode when maybe the Wolves actually playing Daniels as a shooter. But the Wolves can't take seven guys back for Jimmy Butler.
No, they can't.
You get it, like the Heat give up some pieces. Now the Suns are giving up pieces. They're not going to take Justice Winslow, Goran Dragic, Dragan Bender, Tyson Chant, like, you know what I mean? You start listing it all and it's like, okay, value-wise, maybe you're getting to equal for Butler, but they're not going to replace their entire rotation. They already have good players on their team.
Did you want to move on quickly to some possible options down the road if the Suns kick the can further?
Yeah, go for it. Maybe just do like one or two.
All right, sure. Two guys I want to just gauge your thoughts on before we even go to mock trades, and it's Terry Rozier and Kemba Walker. It's two names that Suns fans already know about because John Gambadoro reported, I believe, last month that they talked about Damian Lillard, Kemba Walker, and Terry Rozier in deals throughout the summer. None of them came to fruition, but I think maybe not Lillard. I think Lillard's more of a summer 2019 guy or a 2020 trade deadline kind of guy. I think both Rozier I think the odds are probably higher Rozier is more available than a guy like Kemba, unless they really back off and want to rebuild. I think both those guys for the right price will be available. So maybe December, January, or February, I think one of those two guys makes an awful lot of sense. The Suns are surprising early.
Yeah. I mean, I like both of those names. It's tough to tell right now what it takes, but I am ready for you to try and convince me that the Suns should give something up.
Yeah, I was actually reading some Celtics forums about this, just going back and backtracking some news about Gamba's report, and they were actually kind of surprised about the Rozier like news, but also about possibly getting back a guy, a young prospect from the Suns, who we just offered in a separate deal, and it's Dragan Bender. And what do you think? I guess I could throw it back your way because it's kind of helpful from my end, but let's say it's in January. Do you think at that point the Suns would offer the 2019 of their own, or do you think it'd be the Bucks pick?
For Rozier?
Yeah, it'd be one of those two.
Yeah, I think it would have to be for how much of a reputation he's already built up and the fact that he plays for the Celtics and was so good last year, I think it has to be the Suns pick.
Okay, yeah. I think if McDonough believes he's a guy that ascends on a second contract, I think he's comfortable doing that, so... What about Dragan Bender and the Suns?
I don't think you do that deal unless you know you're going to pay him whatever it takes, right? Like, you don't trade for him and then, like, try to play hardball on restricted free agency.
No.
Trading for him is like, we're going to pay $20 million a year if we have to.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that free agency, probably $15-18 million a year is probably what he'll get, maybe more with the market if Kyrie stays and Kemba stays with the top point guard in the market at that point. So he might even get more.
Depending on how he plays this year and stuff. But yeah, go for the deal though.
All right, Dragan Bender and the Suns first round pick for Terry Rozier and Gershon Yabusele. And I might have to throw back one of Troy Daniels or Davon Reed to make that work.
Davon Reed would just become like a starter in Boston, right?
I think
that sounds low, but I also when it's just like one super valuable pick like that, it always comes off as not enough because you just want to hear more stuff in the barrel. But I think that Boston is always a team that's really valued first round picks. They keep their you know, stash stocked better than any team in the entire league. So I think if you're giving them Bender, who makes a lot of sense for what they do on both ends of the floor and is decently similar to Horford in some ways, I think getting him in their system plus when his value is pretty low, plus having a really top level first round pick, I think that might be enough, honestly.
I believe so too, because I think Ainge isn't going to let him go in the free agency without getting him with some sort of value, in my opinion, because Ainge isn't like that. So I think he's made available sometime around the deadline if indications are pretty heavily that Kyrie's going to stay. And I think you probably saw too the Jump episode from a couple of days ago with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward talking to Rachel Nichols. And it seemed pretty obvious that Kyrie's going to be around Boston unless he's just playing coy with us. So I think Rozier is going to be a guy that gets shopped in February.
Yeah, especially if Kyrie plays well, if that team gels, he fits with Hayward, they have a rotation that makes sense and keeps everybody happy. Like, why are you going to leave that team? They could have four first-round picks on top of all the talent they already have. Horford seems like he's going to stay if possible, too. Like, why would you leave that situation?
Now let's move on to the second guy here, and it's Kemba Walker. And I think he's saying all the right things right now. He said he wants to be a Hornet for life. The front office says the same thing, but they did shop him last year. I believe Woj in saying that because he did report that multiple times in January of 2018. And I think if the Hornets start off slow again, I think they could honestly, I think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference next year. I think you defer on that, but if they're one of the worst teams in the East in January, I think the Suns are going to make a pretty aggressive offer for him if they are surprising people. Let's say the Suns are like near 500 in January. I could, even though some Suns fans don't like this, I could see them offering Josh Jackson at that point for Kemba if they think that Kemba is that missing piece for a playoff run.
I think they could do that for sure. To me, what makes it so complicated with the Hornets, I think the Suns have the pieces to get Kemba. I don't think he's a superstar level crazy talent that's just going to have a crazy price tag like we're seeing with Jimmy Butler or any of the really top level trades, even though he has been an all-star. To me, what's tough about the Hornets is we all laughed about, oh, they need an all-star in return. That's what Michael Jordan's line was last trade deadline. if we're going to trade him, we need an all-star. It's like, okay, well then that's not how deals work, because then you're just getting an equally good player in return. Nobody does that. So it doesn't seem like that's still what he's been saying. They haven't really been talking about trading him at all, but it's a matter of priorities. And I just don't know what his are, what that front office needs or wants. I think to me, what would make a deal for Kemba more likely from the Suns' perspective is if the guys like Jackson or whoever, Bridges maybe in some reality, I don't know. I don't think that's likely, but let's just say whoever they offer, TJ Warren even, I think he's a guy that seems like a player that the Hornets have targeted in the past and Michael Jordan would like. Whoever that is needs to play incredibly well, because I think he's just a guy who reacts to that kind of thing. That seems to be, when you say I want an all-star in return, it's I want to stay competitive. I want guys that I know are going to keep competing. I don't want to be awful. And so if you trade Josh Jackson and he shoots 32% from the field this year, I just don't even think that that's a guy that would be on their radar.
Yeah, that's true. And I think realistically, I think the Suns are really valuing Josh Jackson to make a leap this year. So I think he's not a guy they're really going to put in trade negotiations until the team is really ready to compete. So
yeah, if the Suns are good at that point, then they consider it too. But it would take a lot on both sides to even get to the point where they're each considering something like that is kind of what you're saying and what I'm saying.
With that being said, let me throw that mock trade your way. And I think it actually makes some sense for both sides if, the Hornets are bad this year. And it's Tyson Chandler's expiring contract, Dragan Bender, TJ Warren, if they like him, like you said, plus the Suns' 2019 first-round pick for Kemba Walker and Bismack Biyombo.
Oof, Biyombo. He's expiring after this year, right?
Yeah, he'll be a free agent in 2020.
Yeah. Oof, that's a lot. I mean, I think if the Suns were to take back Biyombo, that would be super frustrating. Why does that have to happen? Sorry, say the Suns package again.
Tyson Chandler, TJ Warren, and Bender, and the Suns' first-round pick, and I send them back Biyombo just because Chandler and Biyombo have almost the same money and they get off him a year early.
So that's kind of added value for them, is just to get that salary relief.
Exactly.
Is that just completely, the Suns have no cap room, right? So they try to re-sign Kemba in unrestricted free agency, and then that's their team for 2020?
Pretty much, outside of like the room and mid-level exception guys, yeah.
Yeah. That's tough. I mean, I know it's unlike, like, I'm dreaming if I'm expecting the Suns to acquire somebody, be able to re-sign them, and then also have room to add more pieces. That's a little bit unrealistic, depending on who the guy is. But I guess that's why I'm attracted to somebody like Tyus Jones, because I think maybe you could manufacture that flexibility to some degree, especially if you were to send TJ Warren out in that same deal. I don't know. We're getting in the weeds again, but like, to get somebody like Kemba and just be locked into the team, I think scares me a little bit, because I don't know if the Suns are Kemba Walker away from being really good.
So what do you think about that? Because I was actually talking to Kellen about this off, like not in an interview setting, but just at practice the last few days. And do you think that the Suns, do you think a Kemba Walker at $32 million a year for the next 4 years gets them deep in the playoffs? Or do you think that maybe they... I don't know, maybe McDonough has clearance from Sarver that he's going to be around past his deadline already, but if they kick the can further down the road and wait till like 2020 or something like that, where they find out at that point whether one of Okobo or Melton is legit, and if not, they could go get that star point guard.
I don't even know if Kemba's good enough to make them a playoff team. So like, if that's the desperation move, I don't even know if that's like enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's what I would worry about. I understand the idea of why the Suns would be interested in doing something like that. A lot of their moves point in that direction. But to me, I would just worry, like, even if you were to get him for a reasonable price, overpaying would be a disaster, because then you're overpaying to get him and probably paying him a pretty scary contract considering his age as well. But I'm not even positive. You know, I have to see what the rest of the team looks like to even know that Kemba would be a piece that would, you know, save McDonough's job if that's what he's worried about. If he's not worried about that, I don't even think you'd trade for Kemba, period.
Yeah.
He has the green light and this offseason was enough for him to show that he's moving in the right direction, then, I mean, what's the, especially in February, to trade a bunch of stuff to get 2 months to convince Kemba that you're the right team rather than just trying to make a, you know, target a Ricky Rubio or something in free agency. I just don't even know what the value is there unless it was something from the front office having a mandate to go get a big player like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting in the next few months leading up to the trade deadline, because it's really, the Suns obviously are active in trade talks, but who knows at this point where they are at. So we'll get out here on this. I know we're close on time. So what do you think? I would predict yes on this question, so I'll throw it on back to you here. Do you think the Suns make a trade in the next 3 weeks for a point guard? And I think with them searching around like they are, I think they will.
I think so too. I think with McDonough being so candid about that on Monday at Media Day, saying basically unequivocally, like, we are going to continue to be active. He said it. And so I believe him. And I think he gave himself until February, but like, come on, especially if these guys don't look ready and they're seeing that right now in Flagstaff, and they'll continue to see it during the preseason. If they don't seem ready, you can't just keep trying it and letting your fans see that you made a mistake like that.
Yeah. I think I'm rooting for Patrick Beverley, because I think he's the ideal mentor, like they have already with Anderson, with Bender, Ariza, with Jackson, Burgess, and Warren, and Chandler worth eight. And I think he's the perfect guy. I know Shams already said that he's the guy that they're targeting, but I'm guessing the Clippers are asking for too much right now. So it'd be interesting to follow. But anything else you want to hit on today, Brendan?
No, thanks for listening. We're doing a mailbag tomorrow, and then I'm sure we'll have stuff on Saturday. Maybe we'll do a Saturday episode after the open practice and then skip Monday or something like that. But a lot of stuff going on. We have the first preseason game Monday too. That's crazy.
Yeah, Bagley versus Aiden. So that'll be a fun one.
Yep. Right. So stay tuned in, everyone. More to come for sure.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening in. We'll be back with you guys, like Brendan mentioned, tomorrow for our Friday episode, 5 days a week. Locked On Suns is back.